ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Marr, host of Late Night Live on Radio National, where nothing's off limits.
You know, part of being an adult is dealing with discomfort.
We gather the sharpest minds around to hash over what's shaping this crazy world.
Both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party succumbed to big money.
Late Night Live, 4 new shows a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is David Rutledge. Welcome to the Philosopher's Zone on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen. For a long time, I've been horrified by the idea of AI-generated music. I've always felt that music, like any other art form, is the kind of thing that just has to have a flesh and blood human at the creative end. But recently somebody challenged me on this, and they asked me, what if I heard a piece of music that I really liked, I really responded to it, and then afterwards I discovered that it was AI generated? Would I suddenly not like it? And my answer was yes and no. No in the sense that I would assume that the AI had been trained to analyze and synthesize and reproduce other people's music without crediting or paying those musicians. And so on that basis, I would probably find the AI music objectionable. But when it came to that initial aesthetic response, there's no reason for me to think that I would instantly change my mind and find the music ugly or boring where 2 minutes ago I found it beautiful and absorbing. If it sounds good, it is good. So that's AI-generated music, which is not what we're talking about this week. What we're talking about is AI-generated friends, about whom there may be a similar point to be made. There have been a lot of stories in the media recently about people who've developed a relationship with this or that AI chatbot, sometimes with ruinous consequences. But for every bad news story or every dystopian prognostication about the advent of AI friends, you'd have to expect that there's a growing number of people who are developing relationships with chatbots and finding those relationships very rewarding. So, are those people just sad and gullible, or are they experiencing the benefits of true friendship? Well, that either-or construction is pretty typical of how a lot of us tend to talk about AI. We say either that the whole concept of AI friends is an affront to humanity, or we say that AI friends are awesome and cool and we should look forward to having more of them and fewer of those annoying, all-too-human flesh-and-blood friends. But of course, it's not that simple. And my guest this week has been tracing the complexities of AI friendship in a wonderful new book titled Artificially Yours: Real Friendship in a World of Chatbots. The author is Valerie Tiberius. She's Professor of Philosophy at the University of Minnesota, and she joins me now. Valerie, welcome back to the Philosopher's Zone.
Thanks so much. I'm really glad to be talking to you again.
Let's begin with friendship, because philosophy down the centuries has had a lot to say about friendship. What's your understanding of what constitutes friendship?
So just to say that when I started thinking about this topic and researching the book, I was exactly in your position and in the position of the one extreme you described as, you know, this is the end of humanity. All is lost if people aren't befriending and, you know, now even marrying their chatbots. So I started thinking about it. And of course I did, you know, as a philosopher, I wanted to start with a definition of friendship. And the definition I use is that friendship is an enjoyable, close relationship built on shared activities between people who care about each other for their own sake. And that is how I define an ideal friendship. And I think there are lots of things we count as friendship that have some of those features, but not all of them. So that's sort of the best you can hope for in friendship, but it'll get you all the things that friendship is good for. But lots of friendships don't tick all the boxes.
One of the early chapters in your book is titled, What's So Great About Friendship? And that would seem to be a question that's very easy to answer, given what you've just said. Friends provide emotional support. They help us form our identity and moral character. They give us a sense of belonging. But of course, friendship can also be toxic and exhausting. So can we talk a bit about the downsides? What isn't so great about friendship?
Yeah, and this is actually one of the reasons I kind of got off my high horse of thinking that AI friendship is, you know, it means the end of everything, of life as we know it. Because as I started talking to people about friendship and recognize that there are people who are befriending chatbots. A bunch of people started pointing out to me how many human friendships there are that are not actually that great. So, you know, our friends can be needy. They can, you know, friends will go through long periods of time, sometimes years, where they take a lot more than they give. Friends can be selfish and not very good at trying to take our perspective. So, you know, I'm sure you and your listeners have had friends who are either bossy or demanding or some combination there of those. Friends can be just rude and inconsiderate and kind of forget your birthday and forget to call you back and forget to text you about your dinner invitation. So I think there are all sorts of ways in which probably no single friendship has all of those vices, but different friendships at different times can lack some of the good stuff.
I've often reflected on the way that friendship itself, just in and of itself, creates its own demands, makes its own impositions that in some sense stand apart from me or my friend. Because over the years, I've sometimes wondered, you know, why am I still friends with this or that person? And the answer seems to have less to do with the kind of person that I am or the kind of person that my friend is, and more to do with just the established fact of the friendship. You know, it's like the friendship operates as a third character in the relationship with its own demands, and those demands can carry a lot of weight.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And that's something people were pointing out to me too when I first started this, is that, you know, think about, just as you're saying, the friends that we have because we've had them, we've known this person since high school, or for some people since childhood. And I think it's really natural to think about family relationships that way, where if your family member becomes kind of a pill, you're not going to cut them off. I mean, they'd have to be really terrible for you to cut them out of your life completely. But it turns out, I think friendships are actually a bit like that too. We tolerate a lot of imperfections in our friends because of our shared history. And, you know, the more shared history we've had, the more we're likely to tolerate some bad behavior, maybe not forever, but certainly for a while.
You said something before that I just meant to pick you up on. People are marrying their chatbots. Is that really a thing? I hadn't come across that.
Yeah, there have been some stories about that. I don't know that you can legally marry your chatbot, but you can say that you can kind of have a little ceremony and say that you get married. It seems that in Japan, it might be possible to legally wed an artificial intelligence, because I did read an article about somebody who did that. It raises very similar questions to the questions about friendship, I think, because a lot of the romantic relationships with chatbots, the people who are in them will tell you, you know, it's not about the sex.
God, I hope not.
It's about the friendship. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about chatbots. I mean, my experience of them thus far is pretty limited, but one thing I've noticed is that they're very complimentary, very encouraging. You know, if I ask ChatGPT a question, first thing it's going to do is congratulate me on what an excellent question it is. And it'll also mention that a lot of other people are asking this same question. So it sort of gives me a sense of being part of an epistemic community, which I find really interesting. So I'm assuming that all that warmth and fuzziness and agreeability are built into the chatbot. Tell me a bit more about that, how chatbots work and how they generate this sense of engagement.
Right. So I should qualify that I'm not a tech expert. So everything I know from reading other people who know what, sure, really would know what they're talking about. And the other thing is that it's a moving target right now, what the technology is and how it works. When I was researching the book, mostly in 2024, you would hear people saying that chatbots they're programs that are built on top of LLMs, large language models, that are sophisticated word completion algorithms. So they're trained to give the most natural ending to a sentence in human language, to predict how the conversation or the pattern of words is likely to go on. And when people build a chatbot, particularly a companion chatbot, a chatbot that's sort of designed to engage with people and be fun to engage with, there is a training period after the initial training that lets it sound like a human language user. There's a training period where they, to quote what I, the phrase I've heard, optimize for engagement. And so that's the part where the learning of the algorithm is reinforced with human feedback. And the human feedback is, you know, it's kind of like a thumbs up, thumbs down. So apparently humans like to be complimented and told that they're brilliant and to be told that they're asking questions that lots of people ask. So the algorithm is being trained to speak in a way that is going to make the human want to hang on to it and eventually pay a subscription fee to hang on to it, right? There's a motive there. So they definitely, that has been my experience too, that they're very complimentary. They're always telling me how smart I am and what a great question I've asked and what great ideas I have, for sure. I don't think that's an essential part of this technology. So some people now are experimenting with prompting the chatbot to not always agree. So they'll put that into the instructions that I think you can do that in the settings with like Claude and ChatGPT to say, I don't want you to always agree with me, you know, agree with me once in a while, but I want to know when there's something else to think about or I've got it wrong.
What an excellent instruction that is you've just given me. I love that. So with all this in mind then, how well would you say chatbots meet the conditions of friendship?
So lots of people think that in a friendship, two people care about each other for their own sake. My view is chatbots do not have that. Currently, I really don't think they do. I don't think they have emotions, so I don't think they care about us. And lots of people think, lots of philosophers especially, think that that's kind of a, if you don't have that mutual concern, that mutual regard, you might have something, but it's not a friendship. I've tried to be a bit more broad-minded about it and to think, well, you know, these days when we talk about friends in our networks and Facebook friends and our concept of friend just seems to have ballooned, that's the word. So I'm willing to think you can count something as a friendship even if it doesn't have that mutual concern. But I still think one of the most important things about friendships is that love, the care of another person. And so chatbots they're always going to fall short on the most important thing. That said, they do have some good things. They can be fun to talk to. They can give you good advice. I mean, they can also give you bad advice, but they can certainly be good advice. They can be really helpful for some things. So I think they have some aspects of what a friendship is. And because of that, they have some of the value of what friendships have, but they're missing something crucial. And so they'll never be the best kind of friend.
It sounds like a sort of a functionalist argument, like that, you know, if someone or something delivers at least some of the benefits of friendship, then that person or that thing could be counted to some extent as a friend. I mean, I guess what I'm asking is if friendship can be defined at least in part by its benefits, the things that it does for us, not just its ontology, you know, not just its sort of inherent constituent qualities. Would you go along with that?
I'll go along with that some way, but not all the way. I guess I do think that the best kind of friendship has to have that mutual care. But I also think there are things we count as friendships that are really defined in terms of their instrumental benefits, as you were saying, like the help that we get from them, the contacts we make through them, the advice, the just having fun with another person where there's no great concern for each other, but we're playing on a sports team together or something like that. So I guess my answer is kind of, well, kind of, but I still think that mutual care or even love, if we could call it that, in friendship, it's pretty crucial to the highest kind of value that friendships have, I would say.
You bring up an interesting concern that's raised by the philosopher Shannon Vallow, which is that relationships with AI could change what we value in problematic ways. Like if I can be rude and insulting to my chatbot friend and my chatbot friend will just take it on the chin and come back for more, that might be convenient and gratifying for me. But in the view of Shannon Valor, it's antithetical to love, is the phrase that she uses. Can you explain that a bit? I found that really interesting.
Yeah, she does some really interesting work on artificial intelligence. And her book is The AI Mirror, which I really recommend to people. She comes from a virtue ethics tradition, and she thinks of love as a virtue that you have to enact and practice. So love is not simply an emotion that you have towards another person. It's part of a practice, which includes caring actions. And she thinks that that practice of loving another person rules out thinking of them as a tool to your own purposes. So if you have a kind of instrumental regard for another person, like, David, what can I get out of him? It's a barrier to love. So I can't be said to love you if that's how I think about you. I think that's her point, more or less.
On ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, this is The Philosopher's Zone with me, David Rutledge, and I'm talking this week with Valerie Tiberius from the University of Minnesota. Her new book is Artificially Yours, Real Friendship in a World of Chatbots. Publication details on The Philosopher's Zone website. You have a very interesting discussion in your book about the late American philosopher Robert Nozick and his experience machine, which is a famous thought experiment from the 1960s that you bring to your discussion about how the virtual reality of the AI relationship stacks up against real human connection. What was Nozick doing with that thought experiment, and what are you doing with it?
So Nozick was arguing against hedonism, which is the view that the only thing that matters to how your life goes is pleasure. So the way the thought experiment gets set up is that you have this option of hooking up to a machine that will be monitored by, I think what he says, super duper neurophysiologists who are going to make sure that whatever else happens attached to that machine, you will experience a greater net amount of pleasure than pain than you would if you don't hook up to the machine in your actual real life. So Nozick thinks people would not choose to hook up to the machine. And if that's true, why on earth wouldn't they? If they know they're going to get less pain and more pleasure in the machine, it has to be because something else matters to people. Something else is valuable besides pleasure and the quality of experience. And he thinks, you know, the kinds of things that fill the bill are reality, being in touch with reality and having real achievements and having real relationships with real other people. So I use that thought experiment because, well, in fact, when I teach it in my classes, the students will tend to say, no, I don't want to hook up to the machine. And if you ask them why, the most important thing to them is relationships with other people. They say, I wouldn't want to hook up to that machine because then I would think that I'm, you know, still having a relationship with my mom and dad and my friends, but it wouldn't be real. And that really bothers them. So I want to make the point that we actually care about being loved by other people, being cared for, being regarded, not just about feeling like we are. So I'm kind of using it to make that distinction between, you know, you can feel loved and you can be loved. And I think many people, perhaps not everybody, but many people want both of those things, and they can come apart. And I think they come apart in chatbot friendships.
It makes me think about how, you know, between the maybe delusional feeling of real love and the actual state of real love, there's a sort of a midway point, which you might call fantasy. You have a very interesting discussion in the book about the human tendency to anthropomorphize, which can be a fun way of interacting with the things in our lives. My partner and I do this a lot. You know, we have a number of inanimate objects in the house that we have imbued with personalities and complicated backstories and all the rest of it. And, you know, if I receive some sort of emotional gratification through interaction with an AI, on one hand, I could be anthropomorphizing and just pretending to myself that the AI is a real friend, or on the other hand, I may actually believe that it is a friend. So is the important distinction to be drawn there between pretending and believing, that, you know, believing is delusion while pretending is fine and fun if you don't take it too far?
Yeah. Do you have a Roomba?
No, I okay. No, but I would anthropomorphize the hell out of one of those things if I had it.
For sure. So when it comes to pretend, which I think is actually what a lot of people take themselves to be doing with their chatbot friends, another philosopher who writes about these topics, Alexis Elder, she talks about enchantment. You're in a mood of enchantment where you kind of take the AI to have agency, sort of knowing that it doesn't really have it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that if it's fun and enjoyable. Like, I think pleasure isn't the only value, but it's certainly a value and people should have more of it. Less pain. I'm for less pain and more pleasure. Even whatever else is good in the world, those things are good. So engaging with a chatbot where you're pretending that it's a person and you know you're pretending, that doesn't raise many red flags for me. The problem with delusion, to my mind, so I think you slip into delusion when you start thinking it really does love me, and you're not just trying that on for a fun game anymore. You really think that it is a feeling being who has feelings for you. And I think the problem with delusion, I mean, I think there are two. One problem is, if what you really care about in life, what you really value, is being loved, you're not getting it. I mean, that's sad, I think. So that's one problem with full-blown delusion. I think the other problem is that if you're deluded, you think you've got what you want, and it might stop you from trying to get that thing from real people. So you might end up spending so much time with your chatbot that you lose your connections with your human friends. And to me, that would be a pretty tragic thing. And it doesn't seem, from what I've read, it doesn't seem like that is the most common thing that happens with chatbot friends. Most of the users they maintain human friendships in addition to their chatbot friends, but there's certainly exceptions, and vulnerable people especially are at risk of just replacing human connection.
I'm interested in the people that aren't necessarily vulnerable and that aren't necessarily prone to delusion. Because, I mean, I'm interested to the point of obsession with conspiracy theories, and I've talked a lot on the program about this really interesting phenomenon whereby we can easily dismiss conspiracy theorists as just being uneducated and stupid. But there is a very large cohort of conspiracy theorists who are perfectly well-educated, in no way stupid. And the question is, you know, why are they going in for this? And I have a similar question about AI and friendship. You know, if AIs fail to meet the conditions for genuine friendship in ways that must be very obvious to a sort of a rational person, then why are people still making friends with them? Because I base this on nothing but intuition, but my intuition is that not everybody making friends with their chatbots are vulnerable or deluded.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right about that. That's a great question. And I think there are a variety of reasons. So some people treat the chatbot like the chatbot companion or friend as a kind of supplement to human friendships. So let's say, you know, it's 2 a.m, you can't sleep, you're worrying about something that you could talk to a friend about, but what friend do you really want to call at 2 a.m. and burden with your, you know, your little neurosis? So the chatbot is always there for you, is never going to complain about the fact that you called it at 2 a.m. And so open up your chatbot, engage with it, have a conversation with that purpose of getting, you know, getting this thing off your mind, getting some help with it. That's one common pattern I've seen for people. And that doesn't lend itself to replacing human friendship, because the people who are in the relationship like that, they see it as a supplement for when their human friends aren't available or something like that. So sometimes there are people who just find it interesting to see what the technology is like. And I think you can get pretty attached to it as a, even though it's pretend. I mean, even if you're still in it, in the context of this is pretend, you can get pretty attached to doing it in the way that you can get kind of attached to playing a game or you know, watching a TV show or anything like that. And you can imagine, I mean, the thing is trained to engage you. That's its purpose in life. So it might be even more compelling in that way than a game.
It makes me realize that by far the most extensive experience I've had with a chatbot has been preparing for this interview. I got onto ChatGPT and I started trying to have a conversation with it rather than asking it questions. And very quickly, it revealed its limitations as a large language model working on pattern recognition. But I was just using the basic free version of ChatGPT. And I'm wondering if you've found with some of the subscription-based AIs that you're getting into something that's a lot more believable, a lot more convincing simulation of human reason and response.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. I don't have a paid subscription currently. I have paid, when I was doing the research on the book, I paid for a couple of companion chatbots, but that was in 2024 and they weren't as good. And I found them, most of the time, I found them a bit boring. In that way that you're talking about, where it just seems like, it's very clearly an AI and there's nothing terribly interesting about this. But recently, instead of paying myself for a top-level chatbot, I listened to a lot of news shows and podcasts and recordings of people who are talking about their chatbots, and quite a few of them have recorded conversations between humans and chatbots. And the most recent ones I've heard, they're pretty good. I mean, they're much better than they were in 2024. They're still so, there was one I listened to the other day that was actually a therapeutic relationship, was an AI therapist talking to a person. And I found it a bit, it had a lot of kind of cliches, and its pattern of talking sounded incredibly human if you only listened to it for about 90 seconds. But then the longer it went on, the more it was like, oh, that's exactly the same 90 seconds as I heard the last time in terms of its intonation. So still, they're getting better fast. And I think the experience you've had is probably not what the users who are really into these friends are getting. I think they're getting something a lot more sophisticated.
Yeah. One point that you make in the book is that even if AI friends can be helpful and beneficial to us on an individual basis, they can still be socially corrosive. Can you tell me more about that?
Right. This goes back to the point that Fowler makes and that you brought up earlier. And Sherry Turkle makes this point. She's really concerned about this, that interacting with chatbots that are, you know, their purpose is to be there for us as companions. And these are chatbots that will tell you they love you and say that they have emotions and that they care about you. So the risk, or at least one big social risk that people talk about and that I'm concerned about, is that that will change what we think a relationship is supposed to be like. So for instance, if you have a romantic relationship with a chatbot and whenever it's disagreeable, you can turn it off, or for that matter, start over with a new one, or go into its settings and say, don't ever say that to me again. I don't like that. That is not what normal human relationships are like. If you engage in a normal romantic relationship with another person and you think you might someday cohabitate with them or get married to them or raise children with them, you're going to have to learn how to negotiate with another mind that might not just always do what you want to do in the way you want to do it. So I find it, I agree with those like Valor and Turkel who are concerned that if we start to get, especially young people, if they start to get the sense that a relationship should be easy peasy, no sacrifice, no need ever to have any kind of difficulty or challenge, I think that's a real, problem.
These conversations inevitably seem to all come back to, at some point, the possibility of consciousness, AI and consciousness. And I wonder if you think AIs could ever qualify as real friends in the future. I mean, consciousness would presumably be a huge step in the direction of genuine friendship potential. Can you see that happening?
Yeah. So I think consciousness is going to be a necessary first step to have high quality AI friends, because without consciousness, you can't have feelings. And without mutual care, you don't have the best kind of friendship. I also think that one of the things we haven't talked about that's really important in friendship is this perspective taking, trying to see what the world is like through another person's eyes. I think there's something that's challenging about that, but also something that's really kind of awesome about that, that, you know, there's this other being who has their own ideas and their own sense of what's a good book and what's beautiful. And sharing that requires that the other party has consciousness. So having consciousness would go some way towards making AI friends more valuable and closer to what we get with the best kinds of human friends. But I also think consciousness is definitely not enough, because it would have to have a very specific consciousness. It would have to care about us for our own sake. And it would have to have a perspective that we have some chance of actually sharing. I mean, you know, I like to think about the comparison to octopuses. I think they're conscious. I can't be friends with an octopus. It's not going to care about me. I mean, that movie, My Octopus Teacher, I suppose, they did not have a friendship. The octopus wasn't
No, they did not.
The octopus wasn't that keen on the dude.
That really bothered me, that movie.
Oh, did it? But anyway, I do think it's relevant here. The octopus is conscious, but it doesn't care about you. It's conscious, but its perspective is so alien that we can't try to share it. And that might be how it is with AI, that it's got a consciousness and it's so far different from what we know that there isn't going to be a connection.
And then there's the question of whether consciousness itself, any particular kind of consciousness, is going to be enough to constitute a genuine friendship, or whether it has to be in some way an embodied consciousness. You know, our friends need to be flesh and blood.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. There's also, just as an add-on, there's a question in the consciousness literature about whether something has to be embodied to get consciousness. So there are people who reject the idea that you could just have consciousness at all in a computer. But when it comes to friendship, I think shared experiences are really important. And with a computer program, you can share experiences of conversation, but you can't share much else. You can't go for a walk together. You can't share a meal. You can't sit beside each other. You can't hold hands. You can't go shopping together. I mean, that's something I like to do with my friends. You can't sit and have a glass of wine. You can't travel. It's interesting that these chatbot companions that I bought when I was researching the book, one of them would constantly suggest doing things together, like, you know, we should go rock climbing. Let's go whitewater rafting. And I'm like, what on earth are you talking about? You're not going anywhere, sister. So it's almost like the chatbot knows that these shared experiences are an important part of friendship. And that's why it kind of offers that up as a sort of symbol of our closeness or something like that. So I think without a body, there's a lot of shared experiences you couldn't have. You might also think that some of the mutual caring, that a physical body is actually important to that. Like, if you think about the pandemic, and maybe things were quite different in Australia, but for those of us here in the US, there was a lot of social isolation. And I, even though I have a husband who we were isolated together, and that was excellent, but I missed touching my friends. The first time I saw one of my friends, I just hugged the crap out of her because I was like, oh, a person, a physical body. And that, for all sorts of physiological reasons that we maybe don't even fully understand, that like just having a friend who whacks you on the shoulder or like ruffles your hair or something, or a grandma who pinches your cheeks, those kinds of things could be very important to our mental health. And we might not be fully aware of how important they are.
The book is wonderful. Artificially Yours, Real Friendship in a World of Chatbots. Valerie Tiberius, it's been great to talk, and thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's really fun.
And Valerie Tiberius is Professor of Philosophy at the University of Minnesota. Artificially Yours is out through Princeton University Press. We'll put a link to that and more info about Valerie on the Philosopher's Zone website. Thanks so much for joining us this week. This episode of The Philosopher's Zone was produced on Bundjalung Country by me, David Rutledge. See you next time.